Blog Talk Radio.
TGIF, the weekend is upon us, people. Thank you for chilling with me on this Friday. You are listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am your host, Becky Noble. Again, thank you all for hanging out with me. You can call in here, of course, as usual. The number is 347-857-2620, 347-857-2620. And, of course, the chat room is open, as always, for your convenience, if you would like to do that. And, wow, of course, we have got, as always, never a dull moment around here. We've got lots of stuff to get into today, lots of stuff to talk about. We've got Wisconsin, we've got New York, we've got poll numbers, we've got, oh, my God, we've, you know, it's endless. I got a big, big stack of stuff to get into. So let's do it. Let's get into it. Of course, this past Tuesday was the Wisconsin primary, and a lot of the political pundits, a lot of the people who are thought to be in the know, this was kind of the conventional wisdom here was that Ted Cruz was going to do well, that Donald Trump was going to do marginally well, and that's kind of what happened here. The conventional wisdom did kind of play itself out here. Ted Cruz and Bernie Sanders did well on Tuesday night, both winning the Wisconsin primary for their respective sides of the aisle. And the final numbers here, the final tally here, I think, in Wisconsin, what I have here, this is from NBC News, was Ted Cruz got 48.2%, Donald Trump 35.1%, and John Kasich 14.1%. And so now the thing with Wisconsin also is that a lot of people were looking at Wisconsin as kind of a turning point, kind of a corner in the primary season, because had Donald Trump won this primary, most people who most of the experts would have told you that well, this primary season is pretty much over, that mathematically Donald Trump is going to get to the 1,237 delegate mark, and Ted Cruz is going to be it's going to be no more than just playing catch up, a constant game of catch up for him, until Donald Trump ultimately reaches that goal of 1,237. Well, that didn't happen, and so now, with Ted Cruz's win in Wisconsin, and it was a pretty sizable win, by 13 points. That's a pretty good. It's not a trouncing maybe, but it is a substantial win, and so now the focus is going to be on not so much momentum. I think that you have Ted Cruz has gained some momentum with his win in Wisconsin. But if you're looking at conventional wisdom here, the New York primary is next. That is next up, and that will be on Tuesday, April 19th, which is roughly a week and a few days away. And Donald Trump, being a native New Yorker, he's very far ahead in that race right now. And we'll look at some poll numbers later on. But I think that New York is probably pretty well sewn up for Donald Trump, and as it is for Hillary Clinton. And like I said, I've got poll numbers here, the latest Real Clear Politics poll numbers, and we'll get into those a little bit later. But the other thing about Ted Cruz is that, yes, he got some momentum from taking Wisconsin, and that's good. But again, Donald Trump is also going to get a lot of that momentum from he's got a whole week now for people to talk about how it's a pretty foregone conclusion that he's going to win New York. And New York is pretty delegate rich. There are 95 delegates to be had there. And but the thing with New York, I believe that New York is a proportional state. So it's once again, it's based on congressional districts and things of that nature. But so it's going to be interesting to see. The other thing with Ted Cruz is that I think we've seen in the past few days as the focus has shifted from Wisconsin to New York, that maybe he's not going to say it out loud, but I can't believe that Ted Cruz isn't regretting the actual statement about New York values, but maybe having used different wording so that it could have been much more easily clarified as to what he meant. Most of us watching that debate when he made that statement pretty much knew what he meant. He meant New York values meant liberal politicians. It meant liberal policies on things like abortion, things like gay marriage, things like Second Amendment issues, you name it, those liberal politicians who have dominated New York politics for God knows how long, the policies of those liberal politicians and the policies themselves are what Ted Cruz was talking about. So I think a lot of people got what he meant. But, you know, in this day and age, there's always people who are, you know, we're dying to be offended. We're all dying to be offended about something. And I guess that I can I get why, as a New Yorker, that you would have been a little bit upset, a little maybe not boiling mad, but maybe a little annoyed, a little perturbed by that comment, because it was not clear right off the bat what he meant. It was clear to those of us who are the political geeks who follow this stuff day in and day out. We knew what he meant, but it wasn't clear to a lot of other people. It wasn't clear to a lot of average Americans who don't spend as much time engaging and watching politics the way maybe you and I do. But that statement is coming back to haunt him, and it's coming back to haunt him in a big way. And so, you know, I think a lot of people are wondering, why does he not, you know, yeah, I think that you can, by being in New York and campaigning in New York, you can bridge, maybe you can pick up a few points and a few delegates here and there. I mean, you know, you're silly not to try, but the states that have upcoming primaries, again, if you're going to talk to experts and pundits and people like that, they're going to tell you that those are going to be good states for Donald Trump. And I got to agree with that, because after April the 19th in New York, on a week later, on April the 26th, you have Connecticut, Delaware, Maryland, Pennsylvania, and Rhode Island. And those are all neighboring New York states. They're going to be those are going to be good states for Donald Trump. I think there's no doubt about that. But again, getting back to Wisconsin a little bit, one of the things that I have a report here from NBC News, and one of the things that they focused on a lot was the exit polls. And the exit polls were interesting. Again, according to this is from an NBC News poll or NBC News report that Ted Cruz's victory was fueled by strong performances among key groups in the Wisconsin GOP electorate. According to the NBC News exit poll, he dominated Trump among voters who are most concerned about winning in November. Who is the best equipped to beat Hillary Clinton and the Democrats? Because, and I'm digressing here, but, and I'll get back to this in a minute, because I think that we are, a lot of times we're so busy going back and forth with Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, Donald Trump, that we're losing sight. The Republican Party and conservatives are losing sight of their, and they're forgetting who the real enemy is here. Maybe enemy is a bad choice of word. Who is the real opponent? I'll use that word. Who is the real opponent? Who and or what is what we have to beat in November? And that is Hillary Clinton and the Democrat Party. That's the prize. That's the thing that we have to focus on. And I think that people are forgetting that in a big way right now. But again, I get back to this report from NBC News and their exit polls. Ted Cruz dominated Donald Trump among voters most concerned about winning in November. 68% of those. And Cruz was also heavily favored by Wisconsinites who were preferring a candidate with some experience in politics. And he beat Trump 68% to 8%. So there are, while this is so much a year of the outsider and the year of the insurgent, there is a faction of people who are saying that, hey, that experience matters. Again, you can argue that Ted Cruz's experience as being a one-term senator, haven't we been there, done that? Well, yeah, we have. But it does show that there is a faction of people who are looking at that experience. And, you know, the thing with that, too, is that there are so many people who are classifying Ted Cruz as an outsider. But I think there are a lot of people who are saying, wait a minute, not so fast. Because you can call him an outsider. Yeah, he's only a first-term senator. You can call him an outsider all you want. But the long and the short of it, the fact of the matter is that he has the word senator in front of his name. And that automatically makes him not an outsider. A lot of people would tell you that. But some of the other demographics here where Ted Cruz did well in Wisconsin was with – including those agreeing with the party's traditional position that trade with other countries creates more U.S. jobs. He beat Trump comfortably among these voters, 54% to 28%. Cruz also outperformed Trump handily with the state's wealthiest voters, beating him by 52% to 32% among those with incomes of $100,000 or more. And I think that's kind of an interesting statistic, you know, because so many people describe Donald Trump as the people's billionaire or the blue collar billionaire. That's it. That's what it is. And you would think that maybe people who are in a higher income bracket would maybe, for whatever reason, be more on his side. But there are those demographics that Ted Cruz did very well in. And on the other side of the coin here, of course, Bernie Sanders also won Tuesday's Wisconsin primary. And Bernie's winning some things. And that wasn't supposed to happen. And I can't imagine that right now, if you are a Hillary supporter, or you are someone who is working on Hillary Clinton's campaign, that maybe you're sweating just a little bit. And, you know, if people think back to when this all first started, that and I have my own theory about this too, and if I have some time here, I guess I can share it with you. But you know, Bernie Sanders was supposed to just kind of be a puppet, for lack of a better word. He was just supposed to be someone so that Hillary Clinton, say she ran against someone in the primary and beat him, and then she was just going to just sail into the nomination because, well, of course, it is rightfully hers. And I was wondering the other day, I guess maybe it was Wednesday, maybe it was the day after the Wisconsin primary, that I heard the statistic floated that Bernie Sanders has won 6 of the last 7 Democrat primaries. And again, this wasn't supposed to happen to Hillary Clinton. She's next in line. She's the anointed one. And what thought was is that is Bernie going to get a late night late night people at your back door kind of visit. Picture this, if you will, that Bernie's at home there in Vermont, taking a little break, and the back door of the someone knocks on the back door of the Vermont farmhouse there, and Bernie shuffles to the back door and he answers the door, and there's some guys all dressed in black. You don't know who they are, and maybe Bill Clinton is with them. So he immediately thinks, oh, these are, Secret Service guys are with Bill Clinton. And because while Barack Obama is the face of the Democrat Party, he is technically the head of the Democrat Party. We know that the Clintons have really been the head of that party for quite a long time. And we know what the history between the Obamas and the Clintons are. But so Bernie answers the farmhouse door there, and there's Clinton and a bunch of guys in black and sunglasses, and nobody knows who they are. Long story short, do you think that Bernie is going to get a you need to do what's right for the party or else kind of discussion? It's an interesting scenario to think about, maybe. And it's still a little early maybe for that, but we'll have to see how many more primaries that Bernie takes. But it could happen, because we know that the Democrats are willing to do a lot of things to ensure that Hillary Clinton is their nominee. The other problem that Hillary has, of course, is that little case of possibly being indicted. But so they may have to have Bernie on the sidelines there, just in case Hillary's looking at an orange jumpsuit there. A lot of people say that it is unlikely, but you never know. We will see. Wrapping up this NBC report here, Ted Cruz called his victory in Wisconsin a turning point, and he is convinced that he will get to the 1237 number and win the Republican nomination. The quote from Ted Cruz on Tuesday night was, quote, "Tonight is a turning point. It is a rallying cry. It is a call from the hardworking men and women of Wisconsin to the people of America." And he also gave Hillary a little warning, and he just kind of looked in the camera and said, "Hillary, get ready. Here we come." And, if that is the case, if that happens, well, okay. Because that goes back to, the point that as divided as the Republican Party is right now, that at some point there's going to be a nominee. I've seen Reince Priebus on several occasions talk about that the nominee is going to be one of these three guys. Well, the thing with John Kasich is that John Kasich is banking on a contested convention, on a brokered convention, and that he can leapfrog over Donald Trump and Ted Cruz to get to the Republican nomination. And two bad things that could happen at this convention. One is that John Kasich actually does that the stars all align and things all fall into place so that he's able to do that, or the Republican Party, the establishment, decides that the American people are just too stupid to pick someone who they think is a viable candidate, is the person that they want as the president of the United States, and so they decide that they're going to pick someone on their own. And if either of these two things happen, in the case of the latter with the establishment, if it's someone who has not done the groundwork, not done the footwork, not gone out and shook the hands and eaten the rubber chicken dinners and gotten the delegates and done the hard work to get those delegates and to get that nomination, if it's somebody that is just going to slide right into that nomination, if that happens, or if the John Kasich scenario happens, wow, it's going to be an ugly, ugly thing. And I saw Herman Cain former presidential candidate Herman Cain being interviewed last night, and his exact response to a question to the question of basically what if something like that happened, without hesitation, his response was the death of the Republican Party, the end, I believe, was his exact words, of the Republican Party. And I completely concur with him and completely agree with him that that would absolutely be what happens. So it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out and what sort of machinations unfold between the establishment, between the Cruz people, between the Trumpsters. It's all things that you never thought that would happen in an election cycle. Well, they're happening, and I think probably the slogan for this year's Republican primary season is never say never. I'm going to take a break. You're listening to The Conservative Cauldron, Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble. Thank you, everyone, TGIF, for hanging out with me today. I am going to take a break. I will be right back. We've got a ton more stuff to get to. Don't go away. Stay right where you are.
Oh,
back. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble. Thank you, everyone, for chilling with me, TGIF. The weekend is upon us, people. Thank you ever so much. Sometimes it just doesn't feel like that you're going to get there. But, well, here we are. And we've got lots to talk about. We're, of course, talking all things presidential politics, reviewing and discussing the Wisconsin primary that took place this previous Tuesday of this week, and looking forward to New York on April the 19th. And just a little bit of local St. Louis-type news here for just a second. There has been an announcement that Mayor Francis Slay, mayor of St. Louis, that he will not seek a fifth term for the mayor of the Gateway City next year, I believe. But so there's that. That will make for anyone who doesn't know, St. Louis is a lot like Detroit, New York, New Orleans. Pick any other city that has been run by Democrats for decades, and yeah, we're one of them. We're in that club, and so it will be interesting to see, at least here locally, who decides to run for the Democrat nomination, and if any Republicans even really decide that they're gonna even try to win in St. Louis, because being a Republican in St. Louis is hard, people. Let me tell you, it's just hard. But anyway, moving on, we were talking about Wisconsin and how a lot of people feel at this point that the primary process now is coming down to delegates, and it's coming down to a lot of math, basically. And the Trump campaign, Donald Trump announced yesterday that he has hired political veteran Paul Manafort to oversee the candidates' delegate operations and strategy into what will, for the most part, it's getting to be more and more conventional wisdom that this is going to be a contested convention in July in Cleveland. And so Paul Manafort has been hired by Donald Trump to oversee delegate operations and strategery. Trump said, quote, "The nomination process has reached a point that requires someone familiar with the complexities involved in the final stages. I am organizing these responsibilities under someone who has done this job successfully in many campaigns." This is coming, this is a report from Newsmax that I have here, and it says this announcement comes after weeks of growing anxiousness within the Trump campaign that his close team of advisors was unprepared to deal with the final stages of the primary process and quite possibly unprepared to deal with what is happening right now, with this very thing. It also says the shakeup comes as Colorado's Republican Party is set to choose 13 national delegates this weekend, and Trump's leading challenger, Texas Senator Ted Cruz, is expected to dominate that slate. Trump announced that he had no plans to attend that state convention. And he's also facing delegate troubles in Arizona, Donald Trump, that is, where the Cruz-leaning slate must vote for Trump on the first ballot, but will likely favor Cruz on subsequent ballots. In Wyoming, where Cruz claimed 9 of the 12 delegates in last month's county conventions, the Texas senator could pick up the majority of the additional 14 elected at the state convention next weekend. So there's still being delegates being elected here and there and a little bit of horse trading going on. Trump leads Cruz by 226 delegates and 1.9 million votes, and should do well in the upcoming primary contests held in New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. But it is becoming, again, with the advent of Cruz taking Wisconsin, it is becoming increasingly difficult for Trump to clinch the 1,237 delegate threshold needed to secure the nomination and avoid a contested convention. there are various Republican establishment forces, including those inside the Cruz campaign, who are working to prevent the billionaire front runner from gaining enough of the delegates. So it is coming down to a question of delegates and a question of some mathematics. And Fred Doucette, who is the co-chairman of Trump's New Hampshire campaign, he is working with Trump campaign chairs in Maine and Massachusetts in the Northeast to elect delegates who are supportive of Trump's. Both states are holding their conventions in the coming weeks. The quote from Fred Doucette here is, quote, "I get the impression that the campaign headquarters is looking to strengthen their delegate operation and fast. We're tuning up our machine," was his quote. And what he also went on to say was, quote, "The establishment thought they were going to be able to steal this from us. No problem. Well, that's not the case. If they do, they'll suffer the backlash. They are going to have a expletive show on their hands of epic proportions." And I have to agree with him, like I was just saying before the break, that should the establishment Republicans, and we know who we're talking about. We're talking about the Mitt Romneys. We're talking about the Karl Roves. We're talking about the, you know, in a lot of cases, people are putting Paul Ryan into that mix. That the people who thought that Jeb Bush on the Republican side was just going to sail through and he was going to be the eventual nominee and we were once again going to have another Bush-Clinton presidential campaign. And the American people said, wait a minute, not so fast. And we know that they don't like Ted Cruz because Ted Cruz is a principled conservative. He says what he means. He believes what his beliefs are what his beliefs are. He truly believes them. And they don't like that. It's not – plus he's too cozy with evangelicals. He's too cozy with that crowd of people for whom social issues matter, for whom issues like abortion and gay marriage and things like that, he's too cozy with the people who for those people those issues matter. But they hate Donald Trump even more because the thing with Donald Trump is that Donald Trump makes no bones about what he's going to do should he be elected. And when I say that, I mean what I mean is that he plans to upset the apple cart. He plans to upset the Washington gravy train big time. And there are so many, I think, people in the establishment who would rather see this election go to Hillary Clinton. And the reason they would rather see this election go to Hillary Clinton is because, yeah, maybe we may have to deal with the Clintons for another 4 years, but they hold on to their power and they hold on to their prestige and they hold on to their status. And that's all that matters to them. The well-being of the nation is not a priority for them. Well, after 8 years of Barack Obama and company, to the majority of the American people, the well-being of the nation is very much a priority. And so that is that is a big part of the conflict here. On the other side of the coin, of course, we have Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. Again, not much is being talked about right now pertaining to the FBI investigation into Hillary's email server and that whole business. All that has come out recently regarding that is that FBI Director James Comey will do the interviewing of former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton himself, and but he has also stated that there is no that there's no time frame for this investigation to move either quickly or slowly. That basically that you know we'll be done when we're done. It was his statement. And if we're done next month, great. If we're not done until October, that's fine too. They're not on an election timetable. Things are getting a little nasty over on the Democrat side, too, because I think Bernie's feeling the burn. Not just our Bernie Sanders supporters feeling the burn, but Bernie's won, I believe the stat was about 6 of 7 of the last Democrat contests, Democrat primaries, and Bernie's feeling his oats a little bit. And he has this week has accused Hillary Clinton of being not qualified to be the president. Most of us would agree with that. Most of us actually would say, well, Bernie, you're not qualified to be the president. But, you know, that's on our side of the aisle. But and he really rubbed a lot of Democrats the wrong way with that statement. And some of the party head honchos, big cheese, if you will, came out and voiced their displeasure with that statement by Bernie Sanders. Senate Minority Leader Dingy Harry Reid of Nevada said, quote, everybody knows she's qualified, so he shouldn't be doing that. Bernie always boasted about not doing a negative thing in his campaign, and I think that's kind of negative. I wish he hadn't done that. Maryland Senator Barbara Mikulski also said, quote, I'm surprised that Senator Sanders has decided to forsake his pledge of going not only negative, but so irresponsibly wrong. You know, again, I think that Bernie Sanders, I don't want to use the word phenomenon because it gives so much credibility to it, but I don't know what other words to use. Before I get to that, though, you know, Bernie was talking about some of the reasons that he felt that Hillary Clinton was not qualified was that she had accepted millions of special interest donations from Wall Street, her support for the Iraq War. She had supported all sorts of what Bernie believed to be disastrous trade agreements. And so that was what had not in his mind qualified her to not be qualified to be the president. And, you know, most Democrats are going to say, you know, yeah, well, there's some sparring back and forth going on between Bernie and Hillary, but it's nothing like the Republicans, nothing like the bloodbath that's going on over there. Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, again, how long is it going to be before Bernie gets a late night visit from some backroom Democrats who, well, let's use the word suggest, shall we, that it might be a good suggestion if Bernie just kind of bow out of the race because, well, you know, you're not going to win, Bernie. And, you know, that kind of meeting, that kind of late night knock on the door kind of thing. But a lot of the Democrats on Thursday wanted this to stop immediately, this negativity between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. You know, here's the thing. I think if Bernie thinks that it's going to work, I think he's going to keep it up. And because the other thing with the Democrats is that they have the whole superdelegate thing. And it's so skewed towards Hillary Clinton. I'm sorry, here's the statistic right here. He's won 7 of the 8 past contests in a diverse group of states. But it has not won him any – this is a report from Politico, believe it or not. It has not won him any new friends in the state Democratic caucus. No senators have endorsed Bernie Sanders, while 40 of 46 Senate Democrat caucus members are behind Hillary Clinton. So Bernie's success is unfortunately not winning him any friends. But and there's a lot of people a lot of Democrats who are actively you know, making no bones about the fact that they are they're behind Hillary and they're going to do what they have to do to get her to be the nominee. Locally here, well, Senator Barbara Boxer of California called Bernie's comments shocking, while Senator Claire McCaskill of Missouri called it absurd. Senator McCaskill went on to say, quote, I'm depressed that with last night, I worry that we might go there, and we can't go there. We've got too much at stake in November. I respect so much all the Bernie supporters. I respect Bernie, but I plead with them to remember that we've got to unite for November. And, you know, that's the thing, is that we all basically have the same problem on both sides of the aisle here, is that ultimately there's going to be a nominee, and it may not be your guy or gal if you're a Democrat. And if you want to get anywhere, you're going to have to, and I know I can't speak for Democrats, but I know that conservatives are pretty damn sick and tired of holding their nose and voting for candidate A, B, or C. They're pretty tired of sucking it up. We were told in 2008 that we had to suck it up and vote for John McCain. We were told in 2012 that we had to suck it up and vote for Mitt Romney. Conservatives are tired of sucking it up. And that's another big part of the problem. There's a lot of ingredients that go into this division. And but while we're talking about things going on the Democrat side of the aisle, I don't know if anybody saw this, but former President Bill Clinton, in trying to defend his wife, got into a pretty testy, pretty hot agreement with some Black Lives Matter protesters. I believe it was yesterday. And, you know, I never thought in my lifetime that I would say this, but way to go, Bill Clinton. He gave it right back to the protesters, and he said what he thought, and he may have not defended Hillary in a way that she might have liked, and so God only knows what that conversation was like between the two of them afterwards. But he brought up some very valid points, and well, I'll let former President Clinton let you hear what he had to say. What he said there, and the audio was a little bit hard to hear, was that he said that while Black Lives Matter, those people are defending criminals and things of that nature, that they and murderers, they're defending the very people who are taking the lives that they claim to care about. And it was a pretty heated exchange. And again, you know, I think you have to give credit where credit is due, and give President Bill Clinton some kudos for punching back, basically, and for calling people on their lies, and for saying what you're saying isn't true. And you know, Bill Clinton is he's always been an interesting guy, so I'm sure that my I'm sure that my praise of former President Bill Clinton would have garnered some sort of response like, well, thanks. Thank you very much, honey. And I just want to know, what are you doing later on tonight? You know, but I'm sorry, Mr. President. I'm happily married. But, you know, so there's that. But kudos to Bill Clinton for fighting back and for calling people on not wanting to hear the truth. But very quickly, before I have to go to another break here, let's go over some poll numbers here. The poll numbers that I have right now, nationally, Donald Trump leads with 39.9%, Ted Cruz 32.9%, and John Kasich 20.9%. In the count right now is Donald Trump stands at 743, Ted Cruz 517, and John Kasich 143. In New York, Donald Trump leads by 53%. John Kasich is at 22%, and Ted Cruz 18.6%. Again, that New York values comment, I think, is really coming back to haunt him. In Pennsylvania, Donald Trump 39.7%, Ted Cruz 26.3%, and John Kasich 25.3%. In Maryland, Trump 37.5%, Kasich 24.5%. Cruz 23.5%. California. Now, California is kind of you're taking a little bit of a look further out, because the California primary is one of the last ones. It's not until June the 7th, I believe. But right now, Donald Trump leads with 36%, Ted Cruz 28%, and John Kasich 16.3%. Over on the Democrat side, nationally, Hillary Clinton 49.1%, Bernie Sanders 44.3%. The delegate count, which is different for the Democrats, it's 2,000 plus some change number of delegates. In the delegate count, Hillary Clinton is at 1,280. Bernie Sanders is at 1,030. In New York, this is no surprise, I don't think, to anyone. Hillary Clinton, 48.8. Bernie Sanders, 39.3. In Pennsylvania, Clinton, 52.7. Sanders, 35, even 35. Maryland, Clinton, 58%. Sanders, 34. And in California, Hillary Clinton, 48.8, and Bernie Sanders, 39.3. So that is a little bit of a look national, not only nationally, but in the upcoming primaries as to where people are standing right now, where the candidates stand. I'm going to take another short break. We're going to be right back. We will talk about a few other things going on that are not election related, but don't go anywhere. I will get into all of that in just a minute. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'll be right back.
Never knew how much I love you. Never knew how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a fever that's so hard to bear. You give me fever when you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight. Fever in the morning, fever all through the night.
Sun lights up the daytime, moon lights up the night. I light up when you call the name. You know I'm gonna treat you right. You give me fever when you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight. Fever in the morning, I'll fever all through the night.
Everybody's got the fever. Oh, that's just something that you should know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Oh, tell about it.
Romeo loved Juliet.
Uh-huh.
Juliet, she felt the same. When he put his arms around her, he said, Julie, baby, you're my flame. Documented fever.
Fever, 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 yeah.
When we kissed him, fever with that flame in you.
Oh, fever,
I'm
a
fire. Fever, yeah, I burn for soon.
Captain Smith and Pocahontas had a very bad affair. But when her daddy tried to kill him, she said,
born to give you fever.
That's right, be it Fahrenheit or centigrade.
They give you fever.
Ooh, 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 ooh.
When you kiss them, fever, if you live, you learn.
Fever,
tell you sizzle.
Fever.
What a lovely way to burn. Uh-huh. What a lovely way to burn.
Yeah.
I tell you, what a lovely way to burn.
Ooh,
all right now, what a lovely way to burn. I like that. What a lovely way to burn.
You ain't right, Ray.
We're back. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble, TGIF. We are, of course, talking about all things presidential politics, of course. But there are a couple other things. Believe it or not, there are other things going on that do not – well, actually, they probably are a little related to presidential politics. While no one was looking this week, one of the other things here in the news is that Mississippi Governor Phil Bryant on Tuesday, far-reaching law allowing people with religious objections to deny wedding services to same-sex couples and protecting other actions considered discriminatory by gay rights activists. This is from Yahoo News. The measure also clears the way for employers to cite religion in determining workplace policies on dress code, grooming, and bathroom and locker access, drawing criticism from civil rights leaders. Bryant, who is a Republican, said in a statement about what he signed, this law he signed into law, quote, to protect sincerely held religious beliefs and moral convictions of individuals, organizations, and private associations from discriminatory actions by state government, unquote. Mississippi, of course, is the latest drawing protests for laws that are seen by some as anti-lesbian, anti-gay, anti-bisexual, anti-transgender. North Carolina, of course, recently barred transgender people from choosing bathrooms consistent with their gender identity. Tennessee is considering similar legislation related to school bathrooms, and civil rights groups are watching a Missouri measure seen as discriminatory. Last week, the governors of Georgia and Virginia vetoed similar religious liberty bills. The latest wave of measures pushed by social conservatives came after a U.S. Supreme Court ruling last year that legalized same-sex marriage. Of course, the ACLU will be riding in shortly. Major U.S. companies have pushed back against such legislation, with the North Carolina law opposed by Apple, Twitter, Alphabet, and others. On Tuesday, PayPal Holdings Incorporated canceled plans to open a global operations center in Charlotte, North Carolina, and invest roughly $3 million locally. In Mississippi, critics include large employers such as Nissan North America and MGM Resorts International. Still, nearly two-thirds of Mississippi voters support the law, according to a poll highlighted on Tuesday by the Family Research Council, an influential Christian lobbying group. So, what's going to happen here basically is that the left is going to use economic blackmail by a lot of these companies refusing to do business in these states. And in the case of PayPal, that's very interesting that they are so they're so against the recent law passed in North Carolina, but yet they continue to do business in countries where homosexuality is a crime punishable by death. So if they could explain that to me, that would be great. But, yes, there are there's also a very large Nissan plant in Mississippi. And that's basically what is going to go on here. But what's happening is that people are pushing back. They're saying, you know what? What makes your rights more important than mine? I also have rights. I have religious rights. And so in the advent of some economic blackmail here by PayPal and possibly Nissan and some other large corporations, is the question here, does it really not matter what the people of Mississippi or North Carolina or whatever state that you're talking about, is the question really come down to, so it really just doesn't matter what those people want? Is that it? As long as your rights are deemed more important and your rights are whose rights are considered first, that's not right. I'm going to say it's not the beliefs that America was built on, but America was not built on discriminatory ideals. But I think it comes down to a question of whose rights are more important. Is it okay to violate some people's rights and not others? Because it's the slippery slope that we're going down. And it will be things like that. Are like it says in that report there from Yahoo News that these are going to continue to be issues for social conservatives on the Republican side, and they're going to be issues on the Democrat side for groups like LGBT groups and things of that nature. But the other thing here, too, very quickly, this is from The Blaze, that majority of Americans believe that religious liberty is on the decline. 60%, as a matter of fact. This is according to a survey done from Lifeway Research. But while there's been an increase among those who believe that Christian intolerance is on the rise, up from 50% in 2013, there's also a notable uptick among those who believe that American Christians complain too much about the manner in which they are treated. In fact, 43% took this stand, an increase from the 34% that was found back in 2013. So there are a lot of people on the other side of that coin who are saying that maybe possibly in light of things like laws being passed in places like North Carolina and Mississippi, that they see their religious rights and their religious liberty in jeopardy. And they would look to candidates like Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders as people who are not certainly not going to stand up for their religious freedom and their deeply held beliefs, that their beliefs and their religious freedom are going to take a back seat to special interest groups like gay groups and things of that nature. But that's an interesting thought, that maybe that many people think that their religious freedom in America, one of the basic things that America was founded on, could be in jeopardy. But moving on. An entire village, including a 21-bedroom mansion, 43 houses, and the most important part, a pub, is up for sale near Scarborough, that is in Great Britain, for £20 million. Not sure what the conversion rate is there. The last owner of West Heslerton died 5 years ago, and the decision to sell the village has only just been made. Potential lords and ladies of the manor also get a petrol station as part of the package, as well as 2,000 acres of farmland. Estate agents say there has already been a lot of interest in the North Yorkshire village, which is a half-hour drive from the coast. West Heslerton was owned by Eve Daunay's family for 150 years. But when she died at age 84, she had no single heir, and the estate is now up for grabs for the same price as a large family home in London's Knightsbridge. "My phone's been ringing off the hook. We've had about 50 requests for details already," said Tom Watson from Cundall's, the estate agent in charge of the sale. The centerpiece property, West Heslerton Hall, with its 21 bedrooms, may need a bit of updating by the new owners, however. It has not been lived in for 30 years after Miss Daunay moved out to a smaller house. Her sister, Verena Elliott, said the village is full of, quote, loyal and loving people, and that her sibling had created a tight-knit community. "She was very kind, and the property rents are and have always been very low," added estate agent Mr. Watson. "This has helped keep a vibrant village community with a mixed group of ages, and there are obviously a lot of people hoping that somebody with a similar benevolent nature will come along to take over the estate. It would be perfect for somebody wanting to build up and leave a legacy, said Mr. Watson. "The estate has been very much untouched in the past 50 years and is now a blank canvas ready to be shaped for the next generation." So anyone out there looking for a fixer-upper, you know, try over in West Heslerton in Great Britain. It's up for grabs. I am out of here. Thank you, everyone, for joining me today. Please go to conservativecauldron.blogspot.com, facebook.com/BeckyNoble, and also go to Politichicks. I am officially a Politichick now. Please go there and check it out, politichicks.com, and on Twitter at PatriotWitch. I've probably forgotten something, but we'll talk about it next time. I am out of here. Thank you, everyone, for joining me today. Have a fantastic weekend, and I will see you next time.